Hi, thank you for joining us. I'm Chrissy Mernon. I recently got a phone call from a woman with an English voice who said, would you be interested in doing one of your interview shows on a couple who traveled in Panama and Central America in their motorhome? And I thought, well, yeah, I would. And that lady is here today, Harriet Hulkyard, and she brought her husband, Dr. John Hulkyard, with her. They're from Houston and San Diego. They're on their book tour now because they have a book. I was telling them, I think this is everyone's fantasy to get in a motorhome and travel, and you do see a lot of people doing that day, but you don't see too many going south of the border, and this is their adventure, and I want to welcome you to our studios today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So tell me about the inspiration for your trip. What prompted this?
I just like to travel, and John had retirement scheduled, and I said, let's drive to Panama. It seemed like a good place to go. So we bought a motorhome, and it was pretty well our first trip.
Your first trip, because that's
motorhome.
A big trip.
Well, we didn't think so. It was just driving south. I mean, drive north, drive south.
It was our first trip in a motorhome. It wasn't our first trip to Central America.
Yes, we'd been on little visits prior to that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But your first trip in a motorhome.
Yes.
Your shakedown cruise.
Right. And we really enjoyed our previous short trips, and mm-hmm. we wanted to just take it slow and mm-hmm. get to know the people.
When did you start out? What was your situation? You said he was going into retirement, but he's still working.
Yeah, he went back to work again. The boss said, just take a few months and come back to work.
Uh-huh.
We actually worked in on the way down in the States. Where did you have that?
Corpus Christi.
Corpus Christi. And we stopped there and worked. He had to work the day, and then we got back in the motorhome, drove to the Walmart parking lot, and I said, stayed there overnight, and I said, John, we've got to plan our route. So there we were with a map on the table, planned our route, and from then on it changed daily, I think.
Okay, yep. So do you recommend going with a plan?
No, I wouldn't recommend that. I'd recommend having the appropriate documentation, but be prepared to take a set of maps and be prepared to follow your instincts as you go along and get local knowledge, find out where the safe places are, find out where the interesting places are from the locals,
mm-hmm.
and be prepared to spend time there.
Now, how did your families and your friends react when you said, we're going to go to Panama?
Well, I think they were surprised and curious and said, put us on your mailing list.
Mm-hmm. Well, our daughter, who was graduating from college in 4 months, said, are you coming back for my graduation? And that turned out to be a critical date for getting back.
Because had you not had to be back,
we might
still be there.
We might still be there.
Right. Okay, so it was something like that brought you back. Right. And so your daughter, all your kids were out of the house?
Everyone? Yes, two daughters were out of the house.
They're both in college.
Okay, and first we have to say Harriet's traveled a lot because we can tell you are not from here.
No, I'm originally from England.
And how'd you wind up here?
Well, I came to see the States. I got on a Greyhound bus, and a friend of mine said, call on this guy when you get to San Diego. And 4 years later, I married that guy.
How about that? Yeah. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
The one guy in America you were supposed to call wound up being your husband.
It was a setup.
Yep. True.
Oh, that, so you've had a sense of adventure about you then to come mm-hmm. to the United States and travel on a Greyhound bus.
Oh, yes. Yes. I saw, 32 states in 25 days or something.
And John, how about you? A sense of travel? Had you seen a lot before you met Harriet? Or is she
my travel has been primarily on business. I've been around the world in Japan and China and other countries. And previously, Harriet and I both went out and got our pilot's licenses and did a lot of flying around the Southwest, including Mexico, back in the 80s. So we've kind of slowed down and moved slower now and seen more places. But I'd say we've traveled our life. That's one of our things.
And I'm gonna assume, just from the few minutes that I've spent with you, that you're adventurous people, that you have a sense of, let's go out and see. Let's go experience.
Why not?
Let's go through your book, because you've got this book, 99 Days to Panama, An Exploration of Central America by Motorhome. When I was talking with a friend of mine about your trip, I thought, you know, you have a picture of Central America, Latin America in your head, and unfortunately, being in the news media, most of the stuff you hear is bad. You know, when something bad happens, it gets a lot of publicity. So consequently, when you think of it could be dangerous going to some of these places.
Well, I got mugged in Boston. I never got mugged in Central America. People mm-hmm. were kind, generous, opened their arms to us, opened their houses to us. People who had absolutely nothing. In fact, one family had a little house, which was wiped out by Hurricane Mitch, and they'd built it again, a breeze block house, which had two rooms, front room had 7 beds, the back room had 5, and you could just walk between the beds. So it was beds wall to wall. The kitchen, cooking, everything else was done outside. This family wanted us to come and stay there. They wanted us to park their motorhome. And in fact, when we wanted to park outside their property, they said, oh, yes, yes. And then we made balloon animals for the kids, little sculpted balloon animals. I went back to the motorhome to cook supper, and John says, we've got to move. And I said, what? He said, yes, the guy has pulled up his front fence so that we can park on his property. And this was the kind of thing that we had all the way, everywhere we went.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, tell me about your route, because here you were planning your trip outside of Walmart in South Texas, and then and you're going across the border. What did you, it's an international trip, it's not like driving around the United States, what did you need to have with you? You said documentation was important.
Well, there's 3 things you have to have. You have to have a passport that has at least 6 months left on its expiration. If you're taking a vehicle, you need to have your vehicle original of your title and registration. In our case, we were taking a dog, so we had another form we needed, which was a USDA permission form to take dogs in transit through countries. There's a form your vet can provide you with that has to be signed by a USDA official. But we were told before we left you couldn't take a dog to Guatemala, you couldn't take a dog to Panama. And so we left with a lot of notions that we might not be able to do some things we wanted to do, but in fact it turned out we could, and many of these rumors you hear were not true.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there's some flexibility on the part of maybe the Guatemalans or the Panamanians, or
misconceptions. Absolutely. People have, this is one of the reasons we wrote the book, so that we could tell people that yes, you can do this. You can drive a vehicle all the way down. You just drive slowly, and you can take a dog all the way down. And the dog was invaluable because in Central America, the only reason you have a dog is for a guard dog, for 90% of the population. So they immediately assumed that our cute little puppy was a guard dog. And she barked when anybody came close, but it was very advantageous to keep the kids away more than anything else. Mm-hmm. But we had no negative things apart from little kids wanting.
Can I say something else about safety? Because I think this is important. A lot of the anecdotes you hear from people, if you research them, you find out they're doing something stupid. You'll find people go out in the city at night wearing expensive jewelry. They're asking for trouble. We had some rules. We never drove at night to begin with.
The roads are too bad. You could find a pothole you just can't see, or a pedestrian or a horse on the road.
And we basically stayed away from the big cities altogether, unless we had to in certain cases.
Mm-hmm.
We always asked permission. We never camped anywhere without finding a local, making friends with them, and asking permission.
Mm-hmm.
And they would make sure we were safe. And with those simple rules, we stopped at least 2 or 3 hours before sundown to find a place. And with those kind of rules, we were quite happy.
What about vehicle maintenance? Because here you're in another country. And do y'all speak Spanish?
Un poquito.
Okay, and that was enough to get by?
Yes. If you got a flat tire, you got a flat tire, and in actual fact, we had 6. But the locals they wear their tires a lot. The tires were fixed. We had 2 stems that were damaged, and the others were flats. It cost us $2 to fix each tire. The folks down there are so used to making everything work. We had absolutely no qualms at all. The only concern was when the fridge went out, because it's a 2-way fridge run on the car and also on propane, and I thought this is the end of it, but it wasn't. We just thought it out and it worked. So that was pure fluke. But something like that, we would have had to have gone to a yachting community,
mm-hmm.
because the locals don't have that kind of equipment. But as for a car breaking down, they're used to this. And it's the sort of thing that happens all the time to the locals, so they can just get up and fix it.
Okay, so you're not going to be isolated somewhere while someone's waiting for a part to be flown in from Detroit or something like
and
that.
And it wouldn't matter.
You're
self-contained.
It would be if it was an exotic part. Like mm-hmm. a computer chip for your refrigerator, like she's saying, those have to be flown in.
Mm-hmm.
And some wheel-bearing parts and things like that.
But it wouldn't matter.
But there are dealerships down there for major vehicles, and they can get the parts if you're willing to wait.
And you're in a no-hurry vacation, right?
Yeah.
If it's 99 days to Panama. So it took you 99 days from South Texas to Panama?
Round trip. It took us about 60 days down and 39 days back. As far as the language is concerned, we did take 2 weeks of total immersion Spanish in Guatemala. We lived with a family. A school found a place to park the motorhome, and they found a family that would take our dog.
Mm-hmm.
And for $120 a week, we got 5 hours of one-on-one conversational instruction with the school, plus room and board for a week, plus tours.
How did you find out about something like that?
Lonely Planet.
Yeah.
And this was literally the day before, because our circumstances were changing. We were in a little camping area in Chiapas and met some wonderful children. I showed you the pictures earlier. And we just hit the phones, and these folks answered. And now, in fact, we're communicating with them on our website, finding out how the villages in Guatemala have survived these latest hurricanes, because that was devastating. Some of the beautiful places we went to on Lake Atitlan, which is a caldera from a volcano with these three other volcanoes around it, absolutely beautiful. And some of the villages are now cemeteries. And it's just heartbreaking to think of that. So they've been corresponding back and forth, and on the website people can share information like that, whether they live down there or just want to go down for a trip.
Our guests today are John and Harriet Hulkyard. They are the authors of a book, 99 Days to Panama, An Exploration of Central America by Motorhome. And this was their first big trip out of their motorhome, and they've made it a guide for anyone else who wants to go, because you said people really, really don't go south of the border for what reasons?
Well, like you say, people are concerned about safety. I think a lot of people driving motorhomes maybe aren't as adventurous as others, but Mexico is becoming an ever more popular destination, and we're finding a lot of people are now moving to Mexico, and this is the next step. If you get to Mexico, which is almost like home, I mean, the facilities down there, the motorhome, the trailer parks are up to the American standards, so that's a pretty comfortable thing. But if you're really adventurous, then you want to go to the next step. And one of our goals is to make Central America more motorhome friendly.
Mm-hmm.
We've written the book. We have a website that has a lot of resources on it.
Well, give us your website.
It's 99daystopanama.com.
Okay, that's easy.
Yes.
And on the website, we're building up a database of places to camp and feedback from fellow travelers and all kinds of tips. It's a resource for people that want to go. And we're going back this winter, and we're hoping to help establish a few more trailer parks, especially in El Salvador and Nicaragua.
The challenge is that south of Belize, there are, that we've found, 2 full-service campsites.
Oh, my gosh, and that's such a, I mean, after Belize, I'm looking at the map,
yes.
And it's helpful. This is after Belize, Guatemala and Belize are like next to each other. Belize is on the, you know, just south of the Yucatan Peninsula.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a lot of people here are very familiar with the Yucatan. And then right after that is Honduras. And then to the west of Honduras.
We've got little El Salvador.
El Salvador. And, you know, we've heard so much. El Salvador has been, a troubled country.
It has been, geologically as well, because they've got, in fact, all through this area is volcanoes. You'll be driving along and you'll see great puffs of smoke coming out of a volcano, but that in particular in El Salvador.
And then south of Honduras, continuing our geography lesson here, is Nicaragua. And, you know, you just have a picture of Nicaragua that's probably not correct.
The neat thing about Nicaragua, it's got the largest tropical lake in the world, is Lake Nicaragua. There's actually routes in from the east where the pirates came in and could winter there, or not winter there, but do the hurricane season there. You have beautiful colonial towns, absolutely classic, magnificent colonial towns. And then on an island in the middle, you've got monkeys. We were sitting under an enormous mango tree with all these monkeys climbing around overhead, and an active volcano, and communities there. There's monkeys all over this.
What people don't know is that Nicaragua is almost an American state.
Yes.
It's there's a fellow by the name of William Walker. Have you heard of him?
No.
He was an American Confederate soldier who had a band of colleagues, and they moved south in 1855 and took over Nicaragua. He actually controlled the country. He declared English the official language, and he was going to annex it to the Confederacy. And the trouble was he was too ambitious, and he decided he wanted the rest of Central America. And he was sending his band of men around other countries, and when he got to Honduras, they caught him and killed him.
Oops. But he could have. If he had stayed in Nicaragua and minded his own business.
It would have been an American state.
So he had a lot of influence then that you see down there?
No, not today.
They wiped him out of the off the slate.
Oh, okay. So it was,
makes
he's
a nice,
gone.
Makes a nice story.
There you go. And then just south of Nicaragua is Costa Rica. And, you know, I do hear a lot about Costa Rica. And I know people who have, because it is just, it's beautiful and then very inexpensive. And a lot of these places, I know people that when they retire, they go live there because you can live there so inexpensively.
Yes, but it's probably the most expensive of the countries in Central America because it's become so attuned to the American market. Costa Rica is full of cloud forests and rainforests, and we saw great big anteaters with a little baby on the back and all the critters, little foxes, wonderful places to visit. And they are in tune with what the, I'll put it politely, gringo wants. Wonderful horse rides up into the volcanic areas and to see it. Very cleverly done and very nicely done for the person who wants to take a rugged trip. Costa Rica is fabulous, but it's not cheap. For example, we did a language school there a few years ago, and it was three or four times the price of the language school we took in Guatemala, in Quetzaltenango. So it's not that cheap, although it's magnificent to go to.
It is the most popular destination for Americans.
I was going to say, did you see a lot of Americans on your travels?
In Costa Rica, we met a few, but by and large, on the roads and in the camping places we went to, it was mainly Europeans and Canadians.
Yes, and we stayed away from the big cities. We just don't we don't like them. Yeah. We like to get out with the local folks that you can chat with and sit down and enjoy.
Experience
the
true country
as
opposed to what the big cities offer. And they have a lot of neat things in those big cities. But if you want a picture, like you're from England, Harriet, if you went to London and that was your vision of the country, you'd be way off.
Well, you'd miss all the little pubs, and that's what you go to England for,
right,
the countryside and the local pubs. Yeah,
just like any place else. And then right below Costa Rica is Panama.
And that's interesting. In fact, all the way, what got me was the different cultures and the different races of people. In Panama, in fact, I've got a magnificent bead necklace, which is like a collar, and it must be about 3 inches deep.
Oh, you know, every now and then, I regret that this is radio because the things people bring in, this is, and Harriet brought some lovely, colorful artwork, and really, it's clothes, but it's artwork, and this beaded
This was made by the Tole Indians who live in Panama, but you also have the Kuna Indians that have not actually, if you ask them, they never gave up their land. They have the islands
Fen Blas
off.
Yes, islands?
Absolutely.
Yes, actually, I'm familiar with it because
the mulats.
The mulats are very popular here. People use them as placemats and wall
hangings. Absolutely.
And they're just beautiful. Yes.
So these are completely different races of people. And then you've got another race, which is the offspring of the shipwrecked slaves that intermarried with the local indigenous folks on the Caribbean side. And they were the local folks were hiding from the Spaniards and had hiding up in the mountains, and the slaves were hiding from anybody else who might want to catch them. So it's a whole race of people, and they speak English. But they're hidden on, I'll say islands, actually on the mainland, but you can't get to them. You have to go by boat to get to them. So it's so rich with all these peoples. And yet these seven countries can all fit into Texas. They're so small and it's all so compact.
And Panama was as far south as you were going?
Yes.
You can't drive any further.
You might say as far east.
Yes,
exactly. As far south. Panama goes east and west, and the Panama Canal actually goes from east to west, from the Pacific to Atlantic.
And that's where you stop?
Well, a little bit further.
Yeah, you can't go much further. If you go a little bit further on the north coast, you've got a wonderful fortification at
Portobello,
which is where the conquistadors brought the gold from Peru, and this was their port, their fort. They were going to send the gold back up to Spain. And my heroes are Sir Francis Drake, and then you've got Captain Henry Morgan, who routed the Spaniards and stole the gold and took it back to Queen Elizabeth. So you get your history lesson as you go along with this. But it's fascinating to see these forts and beautiful scenery in Panama. And then you've got this incredible canal, which is, I can't exactly say out of place, but out of context, because it was built so long ago and it's still working, and the gates have got these great teeth that close, and you're in a lock. And, oh, by the way, we got to transit the canal for free. We went into the Balboa Yacht Club, which sounds very grand, but in actual fact is not much more than an open-air bar with a little roof on it. Mm-hmm. And I walked up. John was on the phone calling the family, and I walked in and walked up to first gringo couple I saw, and I said, did you think we could go through you? Are you transiting the canal? And this woman said, yeah. She was Norwegian. And I said, my husband and I used to have a boat, and we'd like to be line handlers for you. And she just said, yeah, again, be here. It's Saturday, Friday night, and we'll get our permit, and we'll go. So we're sort of agog. So we landed up going through the Panama Canal on a millionaire's yacht, working as line handlers.
How about that? Yeah. That's so neat. That is so neat.
Anyone can do it. It's nothing. This whole trip that we took, you just got to be relatively healthy and have 2 feet, and you can do this sort of thing.
What about health concerns? Because, you know, what happens if you get appendicitis? What happens if, something goes on that you need critical care?
Well, yes, we're very close. We did have a couple of problems, and we went into the local clinics, and with a fraction of the price would have cost to get medication and everything up north. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm thinking of getting my Zocor south when I go down in January.
One thing we learned subsequently is that in these socialized medicine countries, you go to a hospital if you need care. We went into some clinics, mm-hmm. and we had a minor operation required, but they didn't have any anesthetic.
Oh! So,
but if you go into the real hospital, they take care of you mm-hmm. in the right way. And mm-hmm. a lot of motorhomers also buy evac insurance mm-hmm. for something like $200 or $300 a year. You can be guaranteed a flight back to the States from where we are mm-hmm. overseas.
Mm-hmm. So you just have to get to a place that has an airplane
or a helicopter. Yes. They'll make sure they get you out.
They have to have a landing strip somewhere.
Because, oh my gosh, I knew somebody whose brother flew for the planes where they go to like Cancun and pick you up, and that's a very expensive flight. So so you get your bases covered by getting insurance.
However, the medical facilities are pretty good in most places if you're not getting a heart transplant.
Yes.
Most other problems can be handled locally.
Yeah. There you go. Any other concerns that people say, well, you know, I would worry about this because we're so spoiled here in America, and we have everything close by, and if you want anything 24 hours a day, it's accessible.
Well, you learn to live without 24-hour a day. I mean, you just think ahead. You don't really have to have a milk today. You just wait until tomorrow morning. My mother did. So we do. You just plan. Mm-hmm. You learn to live with the local food. You take whatever your favorite things are. If you can't live without peanut butter, darn it, take it with you. But in around the big cities, you can get absolutely anything. You can get your peanut butter. You can get whatever you want. But if you're in the little villages where we preferred to be, you're going to be eating vegetables and the local food. And if it's on the coast, you can get your fish. And in town, you buy your chicken or whatever it is you want in that way.
You could be disappointed if you're a news junkie and you want to get mm-hmm. the news all the time. If you like your New York Times in the morning.
You are cut off?
Unless you make some special provisions, you're cut off. We had this situation when we were there that we were attacking Iraq. And we went into, we didn't know anything about that. We went into in Panama City next to the Balboa Yacht Club. We went into a TGI Fridays restaurant, which was our first real kind of
contact with America.
And they had on the TV, they had a picture of somebody pulling over the statue of Saddam Hussein.
And we were transfixed. We just had not got a clue of what was going on in the world around us.
Because you had been in your own little universe just traveling and had no idea of what was leading up to the U.S. Mm-hmm. invasion of Iraq.
In fact, people had asked us, this was the other thing that was fascinating. We would be in some wee little village in the middle of nowhere, And people would come and say, what's happening in Iraq? And I said, oh, no big deal. There's no way we're going to go in there.
People are aware.
Yes.
Even the what you might consider a peasant mm-hmm. in a small village, mm-hmm. they get their news. They know what's going on.
Absolutely.
And when they find out that we're there from the States, they want to talk about these things.
They think you have intimate yeah. knowledge of that.
Yeah.
Because
and we were actually behind the eight ball, not in front of it, because yeah. We just... we were happy to be, if for that time, to be out there.
What about communications with all of the satellite stuff now? And John, Dr. John, is an engineer.
Well, we have in our book a record, because he does like to keep good records, of every penny we spent. And we took down with us a satellite phone. And it actually, you can see on our chart here, 10% of our total cost was on satellite phone, John calling home.
I was calling home.
You have to. That was an
Iridium phone. But many motorhomers will invest in a satellite dish and have broadband capability. Mm-hmm. So you can acquire a can I name the name?
Sure,
of
go ahead, sure.
Directway. You go to directway.com, you can find out about these broadband satellite systems. Mm-hmm. The one drawback is they don't work south of Honduras.
But the interesting thing was John's cell phone worked in El Salvador.
You can buy or rent cheaply in each country a cell phone. So mm-hmm. if you're spending a lot of time down there, you can buy cell phones. We also had a shortwave radio. We could listen to BBC and Voice of America.
And email's good. Email. And there's email.
Internet cafes.
Internet cafes.
You can pop in and check email. Yeah. Now, what about cost? We have just a couple minutes left. I know we could chat with you for hours and hours about this wonderful trip, 99 days to Panama. Our guests today are Dr. John and Harriet Hookyard, and they are talking about their adventurous trip south of the border. And so, cost. What does it cost as far as...
Exactly $8,420.
For 99 days. For 99 days.
Yeah, that doesn't account the vehicle. Like I said, John kept a wonderful record. And he details here eating out. We spend all of $500-odd. The car rental. We rented a car when we got onto an island. All sorts of things like that. But it really was not expensive. That comes out at about $35 each a day, which mm-hmm. for a vacation is not much.
Well, you think if you had stayed in Houston, you could have spent that easily as well.
Yes, it's better to think about how much you'd have to pay at home to live versus on the road, and I think it's a wash. I think we could you could live in a motorhome in Central America mm-hmm. as cheaply as you could live at home.
Oh, much cheaper, yeah. We bought masses of souvenirs. You can see some of the colorful things, all these wonderful fabrics that we bought and brought back with us. Mm-hmm. And this is only just a fraction.
You packed that motorhome, huh?
Oh, yes. That's the beauty of traveling in a motorhome. You don't have to carry it on the airplane back.
Yeah. Oh, you've got all that room. Now, you know, this is kind of, people say, because I know people in my family are like, you know, I don't know if I could spend 24 hours a day in a tin can with you. You know, how did it affect your relationship?
Not at all.
That's a good question, because we had never lived together like this before.
I mean, we lived in a house, John. We'd been married 30 years.
We were recent empty nesters, and I was still working. So we had never really spent 24 hours a day together for more than a few days at a time in the last 20 years or so. So this is a challenge, and other couples may be challenged by that, but we weren't.
It just didn't seem to matter.
We have a good friend who wrote a book on this aspect, the psychological aspects of motorhoming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting. Different couples have different reactions.
Because, like you said, you had never spent that much time in space. Yeah. And that's a small space.
Oh, yes. It's a little 22-foot Class C motorhome, so you're just in that little bubble. But it really didn't seem crowded, even with the little dog. We've got a 40-pound dog. It wasn't crowded. We had no problems on that respect at all.
I'm glad to hear that. You know what? Sadly, we are out of time. So if anybody wants more information, your book is 99 Days to Panama, because you really tell them how to do it. Here's some things to look for. Here's what to watch out
for. Absolutely.
And here's how much it cost. Everything's detailed. And so where can they find your book?
In San Antonio, at the Twig Bookshop. In New Braunfels, Hastings. These are places we're doing signings.
On your book tour, yeah.
Yes.
Borders Books carries our book, Barnes & Noble. You can also find it at Bucky's on I-10. If anyone's going through there, we just
deliver it. Or on our website. And if they want to buy it for a Christmas present, we will write any endorsement they want for friends or whatever on our website, which is 99daystopanama.com. and just let us know what they want us to say. Happy Christmas to Mom and Dad. You know, go down there too.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you both for stopping by. Our guests today, Dr. John and Harriet Hulkyard. Their book is 99 Days to Panama.
Thank you,
thank you very much.